You're tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
A billionaire that can control $1 billion has a lot more power, unfortunately, than a billion people with a dollar apiece, because they've got to get organized just to deal with that one person who has $1 billion. We all, by what we do and by what we don't do, willingly or unwillingly, participate in the creation of the world in which we live.
People's Tribune Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publishes the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Ordering and contact information will be provided later in the show. Today's program looks at music and politics. Our guest helped found the People's Music Network and the Paul Robeson Friendship Society. He uses cultural expression to raise consciousness around issues facing progressive movements for social change. Historian, activist, and musician David Sawyer conducts lecture concerts across the country. He was interviewed by Tony Zaragoza over the phone from his home in Washington, D.C.
Well, maybe we can get right into some of your work in terms of the role that music plays in building social movements, and historically what role that's been. I mean, I immediately think back to slave songs on this continent back 400 years, and the role that slave songs played in organizing people, building community, and even communicating messages of resistance. Maybe you could give our listeners some sense of the history that music has played in building social movements.
Yeah, I could do a little bit for you. You are right to look at some of the origins being with the music of the slaves. Of course, the blues itself probably begins with an African woman in the West, I guess you could say Western Africa, as slaves were being put on board ships in chains to be taken out of Africa and through the Middle Passage across the Atlantic Ocean and into the what today is called the Caribbean and in the southern plantation realm of what is the United States. A wail, I guess you could say, went up, a cry, a scream, a wail, shock, terror. So the slaves developed their own style of lament and empowerment through singing. Some of the field hollers, as they're called, and chants that were rhythmic that helped people work. For instance, there's a particular song of the slaves about a water boy, a little black child, carrying a water bucket down the rows of cotton when it was like 115 degrees and they're into their 14th straight hour of working since sunup in these plantations, cotton fields in, say, Alabama and Mississippi. And these little kids with these water buckets are going down through there with wooden spoons to give a sip of water, essentially, a spoonful of water to the slaves. And one of the songs that came out of that is a song that Hoodie Ledbetter, who was a sharecropper and the son of slaves, born in the 1880s in Shreveport, Louisiana, and he wrote a song later on based on that those songs, and it was called Sylvie. And it goes, bring me little water, Sylvie, bring me little water now, bring me little water, Sylvie, every little once in a while, bring it in a bucket, Sylvie, bring it in a bucket now. Bring it in a bucket, Sylvie, every little once in a while. And the song has many verses, but it goes into the culture of survival that became the heart and soul of what later became the blues, gospel, spirituals, the music of people like Paul Robeson 100 years later, echoed, I guess you could say, all around the world with the lament and the power of the African-American on this continent. So that's a capitalization of an origin and a carriage. Today, you still see many of these songs being used in a different form. Even with hip-hop, if you look at some of the stuff that Public Enemy did with Chuck D and the guys way back when, if you just look at going back to some of the roots of that music, looking at Grandmaster Flash and the message, the rhythm of work, the ability to maintain a rhythm while you worked has carried over to the way people live today with music. I have to admit that a lot of the music that comes out on the airwaves today, a lot of the gangster rap and all of that, is not reflective of progress, but it is still reflected of that lament, that sense of a need to be powerful in the face of adversity.
David, one of the things that I was going to ask you was what you thought about contemporary music. And since you brought it up, let's go right there. And I mean, there's all kinds of contemporary musics going on all across the world and here in the United States. But the music that is heard most is what people call pop or radio or top 40.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really curious to know what you think is driving that music today, though it has similar origins to the kind of survival music that we've been talking about. What are the other influences that are creating and shaping what we call top 40 or popular music today?
Money. Money is probably the single greatest motivation for what you hear on the radio today, regardless of the music origins. Again, it's about power. And in a capitalist system, the possession of things, the downright worship of capital itself, seems to be the single greatest and lowest common denominator as well, the single greatest motivator to produce the music that we get to hear. That's not saying that in the heart and soul of a people who make music, that that is the origin of the music. But essentially, music is something that is listened to, heard, and created. It goes in a cycle within the creator of a song. What influenced that person's ear has as much to do with what gets to influence somebody else's ear as it comes through them. If what somebody heard 15 years ago led us to Oops, I Did It Again by Britney Spears, it's not Britney's fault necessarily. You see what I'm saying? Yet at the same time, the spirit and the life that invigorates a culture has to have a creative power and merit to it if it is to progress, if it is to survive, and if the people are going to be motivated to make progress with a soundtrack, then the people who make music need to be aware of that. There's one thing that I would say, it's not just about music, but it has something to do with the way in which we all work or don't work together. We all, by what we do and by what we don't do, willingly or unwillingly, participate in the creation of the world in which we live. Whether we are denied that participation through some fault of our own or somebody oppressing us, keeping us from that part of our destiny, or if someone else is getting to do a lot more with their power. For instance, there's a head start that some people in this country got, and reparations, affirmative action will never address those issues. I'm not saying that those kinds of programs aren't part and parcel of some of the agony that we have to go through in order to get change, but it is inadequate, and that the head start concerns the creation of society, and many folks were denied the opportunity to create this society, so that anything of a monetary nature alone will not afford that opportunity. We need a comprehensive plan for the rehabilitation of the United States of America. And I think everyone needs to look at the public commitment that we make to our environment, to our schools, and to our sense of community. Once we have a sense of community, then we will be able to really create an economic system, which is what we're lacking right now. You know, I put it to you this way in terms of an election year politics. A person who is a billionaire and can control $1 billion has a lot more power, unfortunately, than a billion people with a dollar apiece, because they've got to get organized just to deal with that one person who has $1 billion. That's the kind of thing we're up against. And when you look at the fight to get on the airwaves, right now, there are over 150,000 songs sent on a daily basis to record companies throughout North America. Every day, 150,000. That would mean that less than 0.01% is what you actually get to hear on the radio, because the radio does not play a variety consistent with its general wattage output. You have maybe 7 or 8, if you look at Clear Channel, Infinity, Sinclair, and Viacom, all these different companies that own, in some cases, over 250 radio stations each. And they, and their account executives, tell you what you get to hear. It isn't about the person making the music. It's about the money made from the music that determines what you and I generally get to hear as the soundtrack of our daily lives.
You're tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. Correspondent Tony Zaragoza has been speaking with musician, historian, and activist David Sawyer about the music industry.
Well, one of the answers that we've seen over the last couple of years has been the rise of community radio stations. And I know there's a group called the Prometheus Project.
Yes.
Who has been going around and helping stations come up. We just had Thin Air Radio start up in Spokane that Prometheus helped work with. I just read about Prometheus helping the Coalition of Immokalee Workers down in Florida set up their own station.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do we continue to build these community radio stations, and what role do we play in building this kind of a movement based more on community values?
Again, we do need a soundtrack, that's true, but I think it goes beyond just the radio stations and the music, but to develop a society that appreciates community will lead to more community resources being used commonly, whether it's radio stations or anything else. We need more food co-ops again. We need a movement, a cooperative engine to our economy. Now, I know that there are people out there who really do believe that, you know, we have an economic system in the United States of America. I would beg to differ. We do not have an economic system. There's an economic program that is part of a political structure designed by wealthy people for their own good. That is not the same thing as a system. Anything that is systematic is something that assembles and coordinates the resources utilized in the product. Well, that would imply that you would not ever be able to afford poverty as a byproduct of your economy. A free enterprise system, even, if we had one, which we actually don't have, but if we had a free enterprise system, even, we would have a system whereby no one would be impoverished by design of an economic program. In fact, it is to the detriment of such an economic program that is dependent upon production for there to ever to be people who are by default not going to be contributors to that program, but a burden upon it instead. So the first order of a real capital-intensive economic program would be to get rid of poverty. We are training people to not be a community. I would go on to say economy is not an ism. It is not capitalism, socialism, communism. That's not economy. That's ideological, but it is not economical. Economy is very simple. How do you match need to resource without waste? I grew up with that idea that to be economical, to economize, meant that you met your needs through your resources without waste. The degree to which you are successful at that is the degree to which you have an actual economic program. The United States of America does not need to overthrow its economic system. Thank goodness. We need to create one. There is nothing in the Constitution of the United States that says we must have a capitalist system, by the way. The only thing that comes close is in the Articles of Confederation, which pretty much gives the democratic right to vote to white men who own land and slaves. It wasn't until 1828 that white people who didn't own land could even vote in this country. There's a musician who writes a song meant to inspire progressive movements must understand those progressive movements. I know that a lot of times at rallies back in the 60s and 70s when I was a youngster doing them, a lot of times the treatment And then this goes to community values again. But the treatment of the singer on the bill at some of these rallies in front of hundreds of thousands of people, particularly against the war or for civil rights or for equal rights amendment, that kind of thing, a lot of times it was thought of as, okay, entertainment and relief from long speeches. Because the idea was that musicians didn't really know politics, you know. But I would go on to say we not only had to understand the politics, we had to reduce it sometimes to a 2 or 3 minute song that was cogent enough to get across to people. I tell you something, people will remember a 3 minute song long after they've forgotten a 20 minute speech.
I think you're right in that, and that's something that does get forgotten. It's that need for translation and the need to really touch people in ways that speeches often can't. That is the importance of music, and I definitely agree with you. I want to go back to this idea that you brought up, and I think we've kind of been hitting on it, of creating our own world and creating our history, and this idea that you had of creative politics.
Creative politics is simply the action behind taking political power into a common sense of what power can be used for. We have to look again at basic, simple edict of economy. Need, resource, without waste. How do we match need to resource? For instance, I'll tell you a big one, like an automobile library. The same way that you can go to a library and check out books, instead of owning a car, why don't you own an access to any automobile that you need? And you have a sort of library type thing in every community that has a maintenance yard, the real kind of fuel we need, because oil has been obsolete for over 40 years. The electric car was invented actually in 1938. But we need to look at our resources differently. We need to take upon ourselves the collective ownership of the things that we use en masse. Why keep mass producing and everybody wanting to go out there and have the newest, biggest thing when we can recycle and reuse all of the resources that we already have in a common manner? So you take, if you need a pickup truck because you got to move something, you go down to your auto library, you find a pickup truck, you turn in your card just the way you do like when you get a book out or something, right? And you use that car for the day or for whatever you need it for, and you bring it back. You know, we can do that with everything, really. Everything is mass-produced. We have to look at the social ills that prevail in our society and how do we create society through our politics. Politics is not a dirty word. There are a lot of people who think it is, but that's because some people have sullied it. But it doesn't mean that the power to motivate each other as an instrument of a just society is wrong. We have to stop taking the attitude, I think, that democracy is something that was done and is given to us. No, democracy is something that has to live and breathe just as we do. What I mean by that is we need to start looking at our use of petition, referendum, to create co-ops, to create democratic workplaces. We can do this if we really want to. We made a lot of progress at one point in the history of the United States. It comes in waves. There was a wave in the 1890s with the Farm and Labor Party, the progressive populist wing of the Democratic Party. Franklin Roosevelt, his New Deal plans spoke to those kinds of things. But I think we need a new one. I would go so far as to say that the middle class are not deeply interested in voting for their own self-interest because they vote their aspiration, not their needs. They like those tax cuts that the wealthy get because they aspire to be wealthy, and they think that someday it'll trickle down to them. But I will give you this warning. The trickle down may turn out to be nothing more than the drool coming out of the mouths of those doing the gobbling up.
This is People's Tribune Radio. Activist, historian, and musician David Sawyer speaks with correspondent Tony Zaragoza about creative politics.
Yeah, I think I find that idea of creative politics really inspiring, because one of the things that we've been talking about here is in terms of the work that people do, because not only in what you consume, if we talked about what people do, by the time my father was my age, he had had his first hernia operation. And now that he's, 20 years on, has had a couple more. Mm-hmm. And I start to wonder, how do we divide up the labor in such a way also so that kind of bodily damage doesn't happen because it's repeated year after year, decade after decade? But we start to think of ways of dividing the labor in this country so that, one, people have an equitable share and stake in creating and maintaining the society, while at the same time, if you've done a particular job, you see it as dignified, or it lends some dignity to that job, so that if everyone has waited tables at some point in their life, you don't look down on waiters in the way that folks might be doing now.
Big word you use, dignity. The Dignity Maintenance Division of the United States of America should be a cabinet-level job by now. We should have a Secretary of Dignity Maintenance at this point, because we're in sore need of some out here. All humor aside from it, the labor issue is grown. We now could have, with the technology and the advances of technology, we're not getting the full value of our technology, by the way, because it is still owned and operated by the people who are wealthy and trickle stuff down to us, okay? So we don't really have a collective control of that technology. Now, here's what I would do. I think we need a guaranteed income. For people 17 years old and older, they should get $33,000 a year, tax-free, plus a universal coverage, single-payer health care plan, and a free educational and training program throughout their lifetime. Now, people are going to say, how are you going to pay for that? Well, I say stop paying for Enron and Iraq and Halliburton, and let's pay for, little Joey down the street a little bit more, A few pennies out of a few million dollars here and there could actually do some good here. We could have a public system for all of these mass use and mass produced goods and services. Here it is year 2004, Tony, and we do not yet have a National Department of Mass Transportation. We do not have a national airline, although we did, our tax money bailed out the airlines. By virtue of what our tax money has done, we own Chrysler. Chrysler never paid us back. We own Chrysler. That's the national automobile. Now, we should make the standard good working, well maintained automobile for the nation.
I think there are a couple of banks out there that we own as well. Along
we got a lot of things. I would get rid of the National Endowment for the Arts. Oh my God, he must be a right wing conservative. No, not really. Let's create a National Endowment Bank for Arts and Humanities. And everybody who wants to be an artist can register as a working artist. And that bank would give them, instead of having cronyism on some council and some board giving up their money to grants for their friends, which isn't the whole thing with the National Endowment of Arts, don't get me wrong. But 65% of the money goes that way, and another 30% goes for the maintenance of the National Endowment's trusteeship. So what I'm saying is create a National Endowment Bank. Create a non-profit economic sector with banks that support it. People can register for the trade that they're doing. And you can get trained and retrained. If a job becomes obsolete, you still have your guaranteed income to fall back on, but you still got your commitment to giving that kind of service to people. By the way, we already have the money for that. You drop Social Security. Drop welfare. Drop all those public assistance programs. Drop all of them. Drop all of those things. We need to have a point in our history where we all start out on equal footing again, because we never really had it the first time around when this country was created. We need to recreate the United States of America, where everyone is equal. It can't just be a law on the book and it not serve itself in the reality of our culture and of our lives. If we could look into ourselves and each other and want the best of each other to help all of us live better, this world would be very different. Right now, we are creating what historians will someday call a civil war in Iraq. There's at least six different factions over there. Saddam Hussein was already weak before we went over there, by the way. Every time we talk about Saddam Hussein and all the people who he killed over there, that blood is on our hands too, because Saddam Hussein was our boy. We helped put him in power in the 1970s when Papa Bush was CIA director. And we should not forget, because this is who we are the way the rest of the world knows us to be. We should not be in the dark about how other people see us. And we need to admit our own wrongdoing so that we can rehabilitate each other. It is something that we all can do together. And if we dare to do it, we will be a great country instead of just a big one.
And David, you said that you had a song that you wanted to share before you go. Could you share that?
Yeah, I have a song that I wrote called Apocalypso Right Now. It's a calypso. And I'll just do it a cappella, even though I have my guitar here too, but it's kind of hard to do it over the phone. But anyway, on broadcast news of the war, the deception has gone way too far. They keep stating it like it's a fact that there's a place called post-war Iraq. I was looking for post-war Iraq. I couldn't find it nowhere on the map. With cold lies, will we still be had as more soldiers die and kill for the flag? While presidents say it's not so bad, perhaps it's not quite yet in the Baghdad. So if you care for the ones that you love, beware when Bush come to shove. Invasion, occupation, occupation, invasion.
Just let me finish with this. I know that you do lecture concerts around the country.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans of coming out this way anytime soon?
Well, you know, I would like to, but, you know, I don't have... It's hard to get an agent or manager to handle stuff like this. We still don't have an industry behind progressive music. I remember talking with Jackson Brown once backstage at a Declaration of Human Rights Day event in New York, and he said, Sawyer, your problem is you've always been an activist. He said, I had 2 gold records before I did anything political. And I understand what he means by that. You know, it's very hard if your career is built on such stuff to get the time of day from the industry. So what I have to do is just do it on my own. Yes, I would love to come out there. Actually, I have performed in Tacoma, Washington before at the Antique Sandwich once, and also at the University of Washington, Tacoma, with a professor there named Michael K. Honey. And I would love to come back out there again. I need someone to book me to come to maybe do a tour of some of the University of Washington campuses. I would love that. Then, I mean, I don't cost that much. You know, I don't really need a whole lot of money. I just need to make sure I'm making my ends meet and paying my bills, you know.
Right.
That's all I need to do. And people can put me up somewhere. You don't have to put me in a big hotel or something. I can stay on a campus in a dorm or something. I've done that before. That's fine. I like meeting students and teachers.
That is it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. If you would like to book David Sawyer for an upcoming event, you may do so by visiting the website www.lrna.org/speakers. People's Tribune Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where distribution is based on need in order for all to live a quality life. If you would like to find out more about our other print and media resources, you may do so by calling our 800 number, 1-800-691-6888. Once again, 1-800-691-6888. Or visit us on the web at www.lrna.org. I'm Kenny Shook, and on behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, thanks for listening, and please, join us next time for People's Tribune Radio.
For I was looking for post-war Iraq. I couldn't find it nowhere on the map. And if you care for the ones that you love, beware when Bush come to shove. I hope we'll make things better somehow, but it's apocalypse right now.